on today's show.
I think these kind of stories, we don't need to be bolstered in these ways, but I think it just proves the point. You know, it's like the underpinnings of Christian society, which we're trying to get rid of in our world, not you and I, but like our secular society is trying to get rid of. It's good for us as Christians just to give a good laugh about it, to recognize and encourage our children. It feels like things are falling apart, but don't despair. Like, this has happened throughout history. Like, Christianity wins in the end. Like, just be faithful, keep going, keep preaching, keep doing what we got, what we're doing. And it's, you know, God's going to win. So don't worry.
Stay tuned. Greetings and welcome to the Missions Podcast, the show that explores your hard questions on missions, theology, and practice to help goers think and thinkers go. I'm Alex Kochman, Director of Communications and Engagement with ABWE, joined again, as always, by my good friend and co-host, loyal co-host at that, Scott Dunford, pastor of Western Hills Church in San Mateo, California. And you are you, and we're so glad that you've joined us for another discussion on these important topics. Before you go anywhere and before we dive further into things, if this show has been a blessing to you, first of all of you who've left us a positive rating and review through the recent months and years, we're so grateful for you. But we know statistically, we know this. Yes, I'm talking to you. We know that not every single one of you has done that yet. And let me just ask lovingly as a friend, what are you doing? What you doing, man?
What's going on, man?
Help us out. Yeah, come on.
We thought you were our friends.
We thought you were our friends. We thought we had something here. Look, we don't need you to lie. If you don't love the show, then don't leave a review. But if you love it and we know you're out there, Scott, we heard recently about a group of bridesmaids that were all fans of the show and maybe right now are geeking out. They're like, wait, that's us. I don't know anything about them other than that they were all in a wedding together. Mm-hmm. And so that now is their entire personality, that they are bridesmaids. Yes, but whoever you are, whatever you're, rich, poor, young, old, black, white, Jew, Gentile, man, woman, child, leave us a positive rating and review because it helps other people discover the content. And, you know, the Lord works in all sorts of cool ways. And to him be all the glory. We met a few people here even this week at ABWE. At the time of this recording, we're inviting a bunch of new missionaries in for orientation. They're being appointed and sent out to the nations. And wouldn't you know it, multiple people found out about ABWE through this show, which just blows my mind. It does blow my mind, Scott. That's why we started doing this, to mobilize. And that's praise God that he's brought that fruit. But, you know, there's also some bad news happening in the world, Scott, isn't there? It isn't all just sunshine and lollipops. And we do this every now and again. We come together, we discuss world news from a missiological perspective. How can we be praying better? How can we be aware as people, many of us, our churches supporting workers in various places of the world? We have to care about our households, our localities, our own state and country. And of course, we do have to care about the nations because our God is God over all of the nations. And so, Scott, you've come to us today with some fresh gleanings from world news.
Yeah, I think we need to read the news regularly and not because we just are like hungry for information. I think there's a wrong way to read the news and a right way to read the news. Mm-hmm. One of the wrong ways to read the news is to read it and just, you know, in morbid fascination with how the world is burning or even like to be afraid. I mean, I meet so many Christians, even with the solar eclipse that just happened, you know, kind of freaking out about stuff. I mean, it's a big phenomenon on the internet. I even read an article in The Atlantic about, you know, Christians freaking out about the solar eclipse, you know, it's signaling the end of the world. And it's like, we shouldn't read news that way.
That shouldn't be what's said of Christians either. I'm not one of these guys that's always judging Christians based on what the world says, but we shouldn't be the people that's what we're known for is freaking out over eclipses. I'm sorry. I'm just going to say that.
Yeah. I think we should probably be a lot more vocal in shutting that stuff down, you know, because that does. Yeah. So let me tell you a story. I've got a young man, he's a non-practicing Hindu background, person here in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. And he's texting my son about spiritual things. He's a kid in high school. Yeah. And is it true, you know, that that the, you know, that the eclipse is, you know, signaling the end of the world in the Bible. And he's asking him all these, you know, asking all these really weird things. Like, is it true that the craters on Earth, Christians believe, were actually caused by fallen angels hitting the Earth? There's so much stuff on the internet that unbelievers are finding too. And I was talking to my son and saying, hey, there's, while the internet in some ways is exposing a whole new generation to the gospel, it's also filling a whole new generation with falsehood about the Bible, about the gospel, about all that stuff.
And that's a topic for another day, by the way. We need to get into internet evangelism, even what's happening on TikTok. Before we dive into the headlines today, we do want to mention that, Scott, I think we're going to save one of the most important stories for the overtime. And so if you're not a member of our premium listening family, you can go to missionspodcast.com/premium, and we will be discussing, last but not least, the situation in Gaza and in Israel and some of the controversy that's happened even within just a few days of the time of this recording. There's a lot there to unpack that we didn't cover in our recent discussion on Israel, on Gaza, that we recorded a few months ago. But Scott, we're going to talk about some other parts of the world here first. And the Lord is on the throne, but there are some big international headlines.
Yeah. So the first one that I thought like we could talk about is what's going on in Haiti. Now, some of you are probably aware, Haiti receives some of the most, some of the largest number in dollars of aid, as well as in aid from Christian missions. They've had billions of dollars thrown at Haiti. And yet it remains a very challenging place, not only for gospel work to take place, but right now is going through just something you'd only imagine on the movies, the kind of carnage and terror that's taking place in that country. As there was the president of Haiti, who was recently deposed, he was trying to do some cleanup. At least this is the way, at least some of the, I'm currently looking at a BBC News headline.
Yeah, we'll include the link in the show notes.
Yeah, and so he was thrown out of power, and then basically the whole country has been taken over by gang violence. And this was these gangs were started back under, maybe you've heard the name Jean-Claude Papadoc Duvalier. I can't say it right. Those of you who speak French are going to be cringing at my pronunciations.
I'm cringing, and I only speak English.
So there was Papa Doc, and then followed by Baby Doc. And these were the two kind of dictators of Haiti. And they were, you know, supported by international forces for a long time. A lot of shady stuff was going on, but Baby Doc was using gangs to kind of behind the scenes enforce his will and keep out any rivals to his power. Well, now that, you know, there was some reform taking place, basically these rival gangs basically pushed the president out of power and now are just running havoc all over the country. There's a food crisis going on. There is obviously violence going on. And in the international community is kind of like tied up. Like, what do we do here? It's interesting, you know, not to get too conspiratorial, but the international community gets really excited and wants to help when there's money involved and oil involved. Yeah. And when there's just a chunk of land and humanity involved, everyone kind of wants to sit back and let it just kind of play out. You know, when we think about Haiti, you and I were just talking off air. What do we think about? First of all, we think about some of our partners. We've worked before with Baptist Haiti Mission, some of the orphanages that ABWE has partnered with in the past. And, you know, our mind goes to the humanitarian and the spiritual crisis that's there in that country. What would you have to add to that, Alex?
Yeah. And I mean, there's so much happening in the country there too, this rivalry between the prime minister and Jimmy Chevrier. I'm butchering his last name, but Barbecue, you know, this gang leader, former police officer.
When your nickname's Barbecue, yeah, that's not good. Yeah, when you're a gang leader as a former police officer, that tells you it's bad too.
Absolutely. And, you know, what cannibalism, I mean, what's going on there? And fears, you know, this does dovetail with our own southern border crisis in the U.S. I mean, we have to be aware that there is serious unrest happening not far from places that many of us in the U.S. happen to call home. We can't be naive and think that these things will never affect us. But as far as the spiritual dimensions are concerned, I do think back to conversations that we've had, even here on the show. We had a conversation with a partner in ministry serving with Live Global, which is ABWE's indigenous ministry partnerships, ministry division, Ismail being one of their missionaries who comes from Haiti. And we can add others to this category as well. I know multiple people with a heart for Haiti who've not been able to even get in or stay in or sustainably do ministry or do relief efforts for that matter. And many of them have resorted to ministering to Haitian expats in the Dominican Republic, which for those of you that are geographically challenged, shares that landmass, that island with Haiti, the island of Hispaniola. And so there is opportunity, Scott, I think, for diaspora ministry. I think as you see more Haitians fleeing, number one, we have to be aware, okay, what are some of these more violent members also fleeing? But number two, an opportunity to reach those who were living under terrible conditions, and perhaps they can be reached not only with mercy ministry and with compassion, but also with the gospel when they go to places like the Dominican Republic or even attempt to come into the U.S. or other neighboring countries. I think we have to be aware that the ministry might not always happen inside the borders of a nation state that's so unstable. I think we sometimes fixate too much in the missions world on particular countries. We forget that people groups spill out of countries all the time. And sometimes it's ultimately for the progress of the gospel that as they go out, they become exposed to the body of Christ in other ways. But certainly a need to pray for peace and stability in Haiti. And we can look at that and we can also see here's the fruits of a society that has maybe had the gospel in some form, but historically it's been combined with all sorts of other forms of animism and voodoo. And you add all of that up, and what do you have? Is a nation that's under covenantal curses. It's not walking in the blessings of the gospel in particular and the light of Christ just in general, and the blessings that tends to bring to societies at scale from a 30,000-foot standpoint. So much we can be praying for with Haiti.
I'd even add to that, we can't blame every single problem in the world on colonialism, but like Haiti is a good example of a place where colonial powers took and still in some ways are taking. And and how that creates that kind of series of instability, right? Mm. I think we just, as Christians, I'm not asking us even to engage in it politically at this point. I would just say, like, one, we need to just be praying for those people and recognizing that the people that we meet, you mentioned diaspora people. I met a Haitian lady just recently, and you know, her mom's living close to the heart of everything that's going on there. Mm. And she can't function. I mean, it's on her mind all the time. Like, when am I going to get the call that my mom is dead, you know, or that my family members have been butchered or raped? You know, it's just, and it's so helpless. You're so helpless in that situation. And it does, you know, bring to mind that, you know, when we look to foreign powers to solve the problems, they really don't. They're going to do what they're going to do their own. I say foreign powers. I mean, even our governmental powers are just going to function in their own ways. But how important it is not to just do aid work, but to equip future leaders and create something in the local church that's able to be sustained and reproduced and care for people that isn't so dependent constantly on foreign aid, or that is relying on foreign aid in healthy ways that are in partnership, like which I think our Live Global team has been trying to do and does effectively, is working in partnership where you have relationships there and can get the right money to the right people at the right times. Because I mean, we learned at one of our headquarter meetings that almost all the food in Haiti, almost, I can't remember the percentage, it was an astronomically high percentage, is all imported because it was just of the devastation in that nation for generations, not just in this last few weeks. And so anyway, I think it's good for us to keep it on our minds.
Hey, listeners, if you've been here for a while, you know our tagline already: helping goers think and thinkers go. Well, we really mean that. Let me ask you, what are you going to do with everything that you're listening to right now on this show? And could it be that the Lord is leading you to join his mission and extend his kingdom among the nations in a new way? Remember that God doesn't call the equipped. He equips the called. He gets the most glory by using normal, weak, doubting people. Maybe you're ready to say what the prophet Isaiah said: "Here I am, Lord, send me." If you think missions, whether that's short-term or long-term, is in your future, we are here to partner with you and your church in the process of sending you. Our team wants to talk to you here at ABWE. We're a family of ministries extending across more than 80 nations of the globe, engaged in evangelism, discipleship, and church planting. Our team wants to talk to you. Go to abwe.org/sendme. Again, abwe.org/sendme, all one word. No guilt trips, no high-pressure sales tactics, just a friendly voice here to pray with you as you and your church discern your calling. So start the conversation now, abwe.org/sendme. It is, and one more comment before we move to the next story as well. We talk about the importance of making disciples and investing in the churches that are there, the believers that are on the ground so they can be salt and light. You just made reference to that, Scott. And I think it's a good reminder that the type of disciples that we're making, the goal is not just to win souls for heaven from a place like Haiti. It is certainly that, but the goal is also to disciple them, you know, to have people that have the heart of a John Knox, people who love their nation, people like Ismail, our friend, who would say, you know, Lord, give me Haiti or I die, right? Similar to Knox's prayer for his country. People who will make disciples in their own lives in such a way that you're going to see the fruit of that in that culture. People who are going to take the Christian worldview and then apply that so that you can see not only revival, but reform as the gospel permeates, as it leavens the loaf. If we're only focused on bringing souls to heaven, I think we'll miss out on some of the fruit that can also come as people in these churches are applying Christ to all of life. And so a good reminder there of the purpose and scope of the Great Commission. And it's a reminder also, though, that when there is a Christian context, when there is a Christian governing paradigm, that doesn't mean that everything goes well all the time. Right. And we're certainly seeing that in our country. We see that throughout the West. We see that in Europe. We see that even in England, once the home of the modern missions movement itself, right?
I know, right? Yeah, you have a nation that is, at least in the pomp and circumstance of it all, is still calling itself a Christian nation. You know, you've got the king.
Which, by the way, I mean, like, truly, if you watched the coronation of the king last year, I mean, like, hashtag Christian nationalism. I mean, it really is a part of their culture.
Right. And I realize me, like, you know, focusing all of Christian nationalism discussion on England and saying this is what you want isn't completely fair, because, you know, you and I might even disagree a little bit on some of those issues. But to my point, it would say clearly politics doesn't solve all the problems, and baptizing your politics doesn't necessarily solve the issues.
Well, here
we're seeing in Europe these nations, especially in a place like England, that is nominally a Christian nation, that actually persecution is rising. I just was reading an article just today of a man who is a Christian from Cameroon. He was a protected status, came to England, has been in England for many, many years now. When he was going to university at Sheffield University, he won a court of appeals case because they tried to stop him from completing his degree after he made social media posts calling Christianity or calling homosexuality a sin and calling out same-sex marriage. And he applied for a job. So he won the case. He applied for a job at a charity called Touchstone, working as a social worker. He fulfilled all the obligations. He submitted his references. And yet this group decided that his references weren't enough, started searching social media, and found out that he had won this court of appeals case, which he won, right? And because of that, decided that he was not able to serve and work in this role because of his spiritual beliefs, his Christian beliefs, his traditional Christian beliefs about homosexuality being a sin. I mean, he even went so far as this, you know, to say something like that he gave it, the assurances he could fulfill the job, but also just the fact that he can love and serve. He said there is a distinction between respecting and loving the person and yet lovingly and respectfully disagreeing with their views and behaviors, which we would fully agree with.
Yeah. And he's being, you know, nuanced. He's being winsome. We would look at that and say,
yeah, that was actually well worded and very thoughtful, a kind kind answer, saying, hey, I'm a man who can serve this community, even though I don't agree with them. And yet here he is losing his job and facing a tribunal, trying to restore that job because of that. So, I mean, I think it highlights from my mind, you know, we have missionaries that are working with churches in England to see mm-hmm. churches be restarted and restored. Obviously, there is an evangelical church in England. Some of them listen to our show regularly. Yeah. They're godly people. Yeah. There's obviously more churches there than most other places. But there, we also see the effect of secularism and of a nominal Christianity that causes, just like we've been talking about, Alex, with the medieval times, we need to go back on pilgrimage and re-evangelize the formerly evangelized places where the gospel had been and where it seems to be lacking right now.
So much comes to mind. The whole idea, the accusation that Christians are mm-hmm. persecutors of these LGBT groups is dependent on a line of reasoning that comes only from a biblical Christian worldview. Hmm. What worldview in antiquity would have given you the idea, taking them at their claims for the sake of argument,
yeah.
that oppressed victims are in need of help, have inherent dignity and worth, right. Should be valued for their contributions to society. The whole line of logic that looks to the people mm-hmm. that are supposedly on the borders of society, the margins, and tries to bring them in, that is a Christian impulse. That's something that only comes through the gospel. What we're seeing is Christian, big air quotes around that, what we're seeing mm-hmm. is a form of love that just completely unhinged from anything else. And of course, you want the fruit of tolerance and of love and acceptance and charity without the actual nourishing root of that fruit, which is a Christian framework. You know, this is another great example, though, Scott, of how the Lord is free to move from one cultural context to another, and how you see his spirit move in a people over time. And then he withdraws sometimes. He works elsewhere over time.
Yeah.
If this fellow is Cameroonian born.
Came on a protected status because he was persecuted in Cameroon. Probably right. lived in a Muslim area.
Yeah. Right. But you also see in other parts of Africa, and I think the United Methodists are a great example of this, where so many missionaries were sent to certain African contexts and movements occurred. Solid churches and associations were formed, mm-hmm. and those African believers were reading their Bibles, and they weren't reading them through the lens of, you know, 20th century German, you know, historical, critical, biblical scholars that were basically, you know, reading scripture with their fingers crossed behind their back. They didn't have the same Western liberal assumptions, and so they're actually believing what it says at yeah. face value about right. things like homosexuality, and right. they're being a catalyst for revival, or at least of reform, to say to their countrymen and the people in the churches that once upon a time, you know, sent missionaries to them from places like Europe, places like the U.S., to say, like, no, this is not how we roll. We actually take scripture at its word. And so, as discouraged as we can be about England, I mean, let's rejoice in yeah. what happened, at least in his life in Cameroon. Let's rejoice at what's happened in other parts of Africa where the gospel has held more sway, and recognize, you know, the Lord can do it again. And maybe there's a new Christendom that's broader than just Europe.
And let me just, as you were talking, another story came to mind that you and I didn't discuss, but you probably heard about it. One of the most famous new atheists of today is a guy named Richard yes. Dawkins.
All right, let's talk about right. Dawkins. This is what we need to get into. Let's do
and
it.
Richard Dawkins, in England, of course, yes. just came out and said that he is a cultural Christian. He's an atheist, but he said, uh-huh. this is the exact quote. And then I'll turn it back over to you, Alex. He said, I love hymns and Christmas carols. I sort of feel at home in the Christian ethos. I feel that we are a Christian country in that sense. He says he likes to live in a culturally Christian country because it's kind to women and tolerant of homosexuals, whereas Islam is fundamentally hostile to both. And he goes on about the political tenets of liberalism, which come out of a Christian culture. You know, the absolute... he's writing this story for us, Alex. I'll try to. I'll let you. I know you're excited to talk about this. Go ahead.
Well, look, I think a lot of the reactions to this on, you know, on righty Twitter and whatnot have been, you know, angry and rightfully so. Like, how dare you, dude? You're the one who, not single-handedly, but together with Christopher Hitchens and Sam Harris and all the new atheists, especially of the early 2000s, you're the reason we got here. The arguments that you let in, right, that fundamentally dismantled the Christian consensus throughout the West. So congratulations, like, enjoy your field of blood. You know, this is your reward. And I think that's a justified reaction. At the same time, I just laugh. I can't get too angry. I just laugh because to me, it's just good. A reminder that Christianity is inevitable. You know, Jesus is Lord. It's like even those who hate him cannot deny that life under his reign is better than places where his light has not shined. I know I'm supposed to be angrier. I just laugh.
No, you're not. These guys are wrong. They're lacking faith and they get angry. They should be actually rejoicing. They should be like, this is what we've been saying the whole time. Christianity is a better story. It's true. You know, and you see its truth in every area of life, and it's good and beautiful. Even atheists go, I would rather live in a Christian country than a non-Christian country because of how they treat non-believers.
You know, like, ironically, we tolerate atheists. Number one, we tolerate atheists.
Yeah.
I don't think that there's too much tolerance of atheism in under Islam. It reminds me of the conversation between Christopher Hitchens. There's a documentary that Darren Doan made years ago. Maybe you've seen it, Scott. It's Christopher Hitchens and Douglas Wilson.
Oh yeah. I saw that.
I can't remember the name of it. It's blanking right now, but this is probably a good 15 years old.
Yeah.
But you just see not only them debate, you know, Christianity, the existence of God and whatnot. You see them hanging out, you know, having a drink afterwards. You see them in the back of the limo. You see the relationship that was formed. And the mic drop, I'm going to spoil it. So if you don't want to spoil the ending of this documentary, which is very well made, then you can scrub on your podcast app, you know, hit the 30 seconds button, scrub past this. So spoiler warning, 3, 2, 1. At the end, they're in the back of this limousine, and Hitchens says to Wilson, you know, if I could convince everyone of atheism, I don't think I would. And he goes on to say something very similar to what Dawkins is saying. Almost only Dawkins still has this air of, you know, respectability. And this was actually kind of a transparent moment for Hitchens. Where you just hear him saying, you know, there's something good here. You know, I don't want to totally destroy it. You know, if I had the chance, I wouldn't. And again, you realize he rules the world with truth and grace, and he makes the nations prove the glories of his righteousness and wonders of his love, right? You realize that the reign of Christ in history does bear cultural fruit that even unbelievers can't deny.
Yeah, we could go on about that. I think Christopher Hitchens, you know, was one of the more interesting atheists to talk about and listen to.
Oh, yeah.
But he showed a real doubt in private moments of his own atheism. You know, his brother became a strong Christian, and not that they were close. You know, I think these kind of stories, you know, we don't need to be bolstered in these ways, but I think it just proves the point. That we've talked about with the air we breathe, you know, with our friend Glenn Scrivener. You know, it's like the underpinnings of Christian society, which we're trying to get rid of in our world, not you and I, but like our secular society is trying to get rid of, are the very things that allow us to critique Christianity and have these views. And so I don't know that what I just said there made a lot of sense. I think people get the sense of what I mean, though. And that we're trying to, you know, it's good for us as Christians just to give a good laugh about it and to recognize and encourage our children. It feels like things are falling apart, but don't despair. Like, this has happened throughout history. Like, Christianity wins in the end. Like, just be faithful. Keep going. Keep preaching. Keep doing what we're doing. And it's, you know, God's going to win. So don't worry.
And speaking of, that really does lead us nicely, you know, to the next one, because in a wildly different context, you have believers in a different place, in an even harder cultural context, holding on to that hope and not deviating from those traditions at all.
Yeah, it is. You know, we just got done with Holy Week a couple Sundays ago, Easter Sunday. And it's just a good for us to stop and remind ourselves that there are Christians that are being faithful and serving Jesus in some of the most persecuted, difficult places around the world. BBC News had a story. I just want to encourage our listeners or our viewers, occasionally just go to CNN, BBC, MSNBC, Fox News, Al Jazeera, it doesn't really matter, and just go into their world news section and just browse. It's good for your prayer life to just look at what's happening around the world and see what's going on. You don't even have to read the stories. Just look at the headlines even and help us think about what's happening around the world. But they talk about Christianity in Iran and how it's... I don't want to say flourishing, but how Christians there are continuing to practice their faith, and they're practicing it in secret despite incredible increased persecution. The story of a young man who was imprisoned at the age of 20 and kept in solitary confinement, interrogated repeatedly and threatened, all because of his faith. And yet, despite all these things, Christians are still gathering in secret, worshiping the Lord, spreading the gospel, despite deaths, persecution, imprisonments. And I just read that story and I was reminded, you know, I've got a friend, I can't say his name on here, you know, suffering for the Lord in prison in Afghanistan. I've met persecuted believers, in Northwest China, Kazakhstan, who are beaten up regularly for their faith, arrested for their faith. Sometimes the persecution is government related. Often the persecution comes from their own community. If someone comes to Christ, we just talked to our Indian brother the other day about, hopefully I think that podcast would have come out by now, talking about persecution of believers in India.
That's a great teaser, because the way the order works out right now, I don't believe our listeners have yet heard our conversation Brother Stephen from Manipur. Yes. So another tough persecution context, and we'll be talking more about that soon.
So yeah, I mean, as believers, we ought to be praying for our fellow believers, our brothers and sisters in those places, but also taking heart that they're being faithful to God in difficult circumstances. We can be faithful to God in our relatively easy circumstances, and to whom much is given, much is required. And so it's a good reminder as we hear those kind of stories going on around the world.
Well, we also love hearing from our audience, and many of our audience members are in parts of the world that we don't think about, that we don't see in the news. And so we'd love to hear stories if there's things happening in your midst that we should share, that we should make others aware of. We do this every now and again. We're not a news podcast, but we do need to be world Christians, because our God is a global God. And so if you have feedback to share with us, you can contact me, Alex, at missionspodcast.com. You can contact Scott as well, scott@missionspodcast.com. But if you'd like to hear our discussion of the fourth and final story, which is the difficulty happening right now with aid workers in Gaza and controversy over the actions of Israel there, what does it mean for Christians? What does it mean for believers there and abroad who want to see the Jews and the Palestinians come to the saving knowledge of Christ? Well, then you'll have to become a premium subscriber. By the way, this is not lining any of our pockets. We do not profit. What happens, though, is that what this does, this is a way of giving back to the ministry, and particularly allowing us to do more when you see us out on the road, when you see, hey, look, they've got new equipment, anything like that at all. It really does help us not be a burden, but be a blessing to those that are listening across the world. So if you believe in the work of ministry that we're doing, we shared at the beginning of the show, people are becoming missionaries sometimes because of what they hear here. Well, help support that by joining the premium family. You can go to missionspodcast.com/premium and listen to our overtime segment that we're about to record here. For the rest of you, we will see you next week on the Missions Podcast. Until then, go make disciples of all nations.